Chapter 8. In Bluford High's auditorium at lunchtime, about 50 students auditioned for the talent show. Teachers from the drama and music departments were judging the performances. Darcy had practiced her song many times, but when her turn came, she felt as if she were going to her execution. She almost stumbled going up the 3 steps to the stage. She did not care at this point if she earned a place in the talent show. She just did not want to embarrass herself too much, and she wanted to get it over with. Darcy sang "Stop in the Name of Love," and when she finished the last line, she was shocked to hear applause. "All right," Hakeem said when she reached her seat. Darcy was overwhelmed with relief that she could now sit and watch everybody else. A sophomore performed spoken poetry filled with the rhymes straight off a rap CD. A number of students clapped when she finished. A freshman boy performed an embarrassingly bad comic skit involving a puppet, and there was hardly any applause at all. Then, finally, it was time for Hakeem to go on stage. He strode towards the stage with authority, his guitar on his back. He stood silent a moment, his head down. Then he brought the guitar around, strumming out a pounding rhythm to a song Darcy had never heard him sing before. "Gotta live until I die. Don't nobody take me out before my time. Gunshots in the night, you know this can't be right. Listen up, take my hand, help me when I make my stand. Gotta rise, gotta sing, sing so strong. Drown the sorrow with my song. Take back the day, take back the night. With our hearts and our voices, we'll win this fight." The applause began during the song, and kids were clapping their hands and stumping their feet to the driving cry of anger and pain. Darcy knew what Hakeem was trying to say in his song, but she wondered if the other students understood him. Not everyone had seen Roiland get shot, and many kids were too young to know Russell Walker, the boy who was gunned down last year. Still, as she watched, Darcy could see that Hakeem was stirring the crowd with his guitar and his voice. Slowly, one by one, the students stood up, pressing their palms skyward in a gesture of enthusiastic approval. Their faces told Darcy they were not just supporting the young man on stage. They were also cheering for his tribute to all the shattered lives on the street, all the little kids afraid to go out and play, all their friends and relatives who had suffered, all the young people who had paid the ultimate price. Darcy felt tears streaming down her face. She was so happy for Hakeem. She had been hoping and praying he would do well, but she never expected such a performance and such a reaction. Outside the auditorium in the afternoon, the names of the students who would be in the talent show were posted. Darcy did not make it, but she wasn't disappointed. She enjoyed singing, but she didn't like public solos. Hakeem would, of course, be in the talent show. Students crowded around him, congratulating him. "You were wonderful," Darcy said, managing to get through his other admirers. Hakeem smiled and winked, but all the attention appeared to make him a little nervous. He was stuttering a bit. He escaped to the track to get in some laps. Darcy's dinner with her father was that evening, and as the time drew near, her anxiety increased. She sat in the front window of the apartment waiting for the silver Toyota to pull up. He came at 6:10, and Darcy jumped up. "I'm going now, Mom," she said. Her mother had the night off. "Have a nice time, sweetie," Mom replied. As Darcy sat down in her father's car, she noticed right away that Dad looked more fit than when he first arrived in town. He was trimmer and also more neatly dressed. "Hi," Darcy said, buckling her seatbelt. "You look like you lost some weight." A nervous smile raced across his face. "Yeah, I've been working out at the gym, trying to lose my spare tire and get back some muscle tone. Been laying off the cheeseburgers, too."
"That's good," Darcy said. "It's healthier."
She felt so stiff, so awkward. She could not have felt worse if she were going to dinner with Mr. Keenan, her English teacher.
"You're looking good, Darcy. A little too skinny, maybe. Do you like Chinese food?"
"I think so," Darcy said. "I haven't had much of it."
"I know a nice little Chinese restaurant. Healthy and delicious," Dad assured her.
He seemed as nervous as she was.
It was hard to believe this was the warm, funny father Darcy used to love being with when she was 11 years old. It was as if those 5 years he was away had dug a huge chasm between them, and neither of them knew how to jump across.
"How's school going, Darcy?"
he asked. "Okay. I'm doing okay in everything. I just finished my astronomy project and the teacher liked it."
"I suppose you have lots of nice friends," he said.
"A few." 5 years ago, Darcy would have told him about Hakeem, but talking to him now about something personal seemed as awkward as sharing makeup secrets with a stranger. Darcy felt deeply sad. She wondered if it would be this way from now on, if something had happened in those 5 years that could never be repaired. They pulled into the restaurant parking lot and went into a small, lovely place with dramatic paintings of red dragons on the walls. The chairs were red leather, and wonderful fragrances floated from the kitchen. After they were seated, Darcy looked at the menu. "I guess when I think of Chinese food, I think of chop suey or something." Dad smiled. It was his first real smile since the evening had started. Darcy realized all this was even more difficult for him than it was for her. He was the bad guy. He carried the guilt for what had happened.
"This one, number 4, that's excellent," he said.
Darcy read the English section of the menu. "Garlic sauteed scallops and shrimp, seasonal greens, eggplant, Szechuan." "It sounds good," she said. "I just hope it doesn't taste like something Aunt Charlotte would serve up." Darcy heard an odd noise, and she looked up to see her father laughing. She laughed a little, too. Apparently, Dad remembered those once-a-month treks to Aunt Charlotte's and how the family would spend the whole trip home dissing the awful food.
"Oh, my," Dad said, shaking his head sympathetically. "You still go over there, do you? And she's still making those concoctions."
"Yeah," Darcy chuckled. "She takes all these gourmet cooking classes. She's smart and everything, but it never comes out right."
"Do you remember the octopus?" Dad asked.
"Yeah," Darcy said, starting to laugh again. "I couldn't get my fork into that rubbery thing. And Jamie, she was about 5, I think, and she goes, 'What's this stuff?' And Aunt Charlotte says, 'It's a delicacy, it's octopus.' And Jamie starts throwing up under the table."
"And the cucumber soup," Dad gasped,
wiping his eyes after tears of laughter. "And the fish that smells so bad, the people in the next townhouse complain," Darcy giggled. For just a few minutes, it was like old times, but then Darcy remembered the distance between them. To break the awkward silence that suddenly set in, Darcy asked, "How's your job?"
"Good. I sell men's clothing, you know. The store is nice. My schedule is perfect, and I'm making good money."
"That's great. I always thought you were a good salesman." Dad smiled and then clenched his hands in his lap. Whenever he had something difficult to say, he did that. Darcy did the same thing.
"Darcy, how's your grandma doing?"
"Pretty good. She's almost normal sometimes, for a little while, but mostly she's frail and kind of confused. But we all help take care of her. And it works out all right," Darcy answered. She felt tense. What was her father driving at? Was he, like Aunt Charlotte, going to suggest putting Grandma in a nursing home?
"The thing is, I was wondering what I could do to help," Dad stated. "There must be something."
"Mom said you're already helping out with money," Darcy said.
"I mean, I'd be willing to pay for everything, and your mom could quit her job, and..."
"Mom told me she'd never quit her job," Darcy interrupted.
"Yes, she told me that too. I thought you might try to convince her," Dad said, looking intently at Darcy.
Darcy looked down at the tablecloth, not knowing what to say. The truth was that Mom did not trust him. Darcy did not really trust him either. Could Dad possibly be giving Mom enough money to quit her job? Darcy wondered. Not wanting to ask him directly, she said, "I guess it'll take time, you know, for Mom to be able to do something like quit her job."
"I understand that. Believe me, I do. And I don't blame her. But I love your Mom. I know it sounds phony after what happened, but it's true. And I love both you girls, too. Very much." A cruel response threatened to fly from Darcy's lips.
Oh, really, Dad? Is that why you ran away with a 24-year-old woman? Is that why you abandoned us?
But she said nothing.
I know I haven't acted in a loving way, he went on. I can't take away the hurt I caused. It happened. There are no excuses. There were some problems in our marriage, but I took the coward's way out. Sometimes when things are not going great and a temptation comes to a person, it's so powerful. So powerful. You decide in a moment of, I don't know, craziness or something. You decide that this one thing is what's going to put everything right. You forget all the decent things you've always believed in, and you tell yourself you deserve this happiness. Suddenly you're feeling young and alive like you haven't felt in years, and the words came out slowly, painfully, like nails being pulled from a hard, dry board.
And then when the fire dies out, you're left with the ashes. Then you ache with guilt, and you realize you've hurt the people dearest to you, and you can't take it back.
Darcy noticed that her father's eyes were bright with unshed tears.
Why didn't you come back sooner, Dad? You just up and disappear for 5 years and expect everything to be all right?
Darcy asked.
No, that's not it. Darcy, I just didn't have the courage to face what I'd done to my family, and I started drinking. I crawled into the bottle because I was a coward. I was in and out of a dozen detox centers. Every time I decided to come home, I'd lose the courage again. I'd think to myself, what does that family need with a worthless drunk? Haven't I hurt them enough? Then I'd drink myself blind again. And then one day, I guess it was a stroke of fate, maybe a blow from the good Lord, I got stabbed in an alley and almost bled to death.
He pointed to a scar near his left eye.
Almost got blinded. I decided to get sober and stay sober. And somehow I did. And then when I was sure it was for real, I came home.
Well, Dad, I don't know how all this is going to play out. I'm not even sure how I want it to go. But for what it's worth, I'm glad you decided to come back, Darcy said.
He reached over and grasped her hand, giving it a squeeze. It was the first time her father had touched her since the goodbye hug those many years ago. After dinner, Darcy and her father had another cup of coffee.
Maybe your mom and I will go for counseling, he said. I know things can't go back to the way they were, but I'll do anything it takes to become part of this family again. I'd like to take care of my family the way I used to. I'd like a chance to make up, to try to make up.
His voice shook as he spoke. He was a big man, and there was something terrible about hearing his voice shake. It was like seeing a mighty oak tree waver in the wind, making you wonder if almost anything in the world might crash at some point.